Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Jenny.
Thank you for joining us for episode 235 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 9 of A Feast for Crows, that's Brienne 2.
As always, we'll chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully provide you with some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarise what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes, they'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, Jenny?
I'm doing great. Thanks for helping me through that audio difficulty.
I pretend like me and McKelly don't have that every time. We do. Well, welcome. It's great to see you. It's been ages since we recorded together.
It has been. I'm glad to be back. It's so fun.
Yeah. What's been going on with you? I mean, obviously you spend most of your time being our Discord queen, but what's going on in your life? Do tell.
Oh, you know, we're just gearing up for Mother's Day now after the big Valentine's Day flower massacre. So.
That's right. For those who've forgotten, Jenny's day job is she's a florist, which is so nice. She brings colour to all our lives.
Well, some of our lives. McKelly thinks they're too expensive.
McKelly is thrifty. I'll give him that. So I had a story to tell, which literally should have been in last week's episode, but I forgot about it, which is when you hear this story, you'll be astonished that even I managed to forget this story. So. You know I went to the eclipse?
Yes.
I drove a long way to the eclipse. Just before the eclipse, I met a dog. And the dog bit me. Like, 10 minutes before the eclipse started, I got bitten by a dog.
Well, you know, they said that animals might act strangely around the eclipse.
10 minutes before the eclipse started. I mean, I take your point, but it seemed like it hadn't... The moon had not yet started to cover the sun.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's a bit early then.
Interestingly, the lady who was walking the dog that bit me said, "Dory, did you forget that he's a friend?" So the dog was called Dory, which means it was named after a fish that forgets things. And I'd just literally just been stroking this dog like 5 seconds earlier, and it just jumped up and bit me. And I don't think I've ever been bitten by a dog before. It was kind of
Did it break the skin?
It did partially. I mean, I figured it was not... totally rabid because it was a lady walking it.
Okay, but, yes. Hopefully it's had all of its shots.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I'm amazed that I'm more as blasé about that because I'm terrified of rabies and it never even occurred to me until like 2 weeks later that I should probably have checked with
that you might have been worried about that? Yes.
Yeah, I haven't been worried about it, but that's really astonishing because I worry about that, you know, if a mosquito bites me.
I do like that the dog was named Dory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She also was a dead ringer for the... You know, I have two dogs of my own, one of whom doesn't like me. The one who doesn't like me, she was a dead ringer for that dog. So it was like her soul sister decided to bite me.
How funny. Mm. Hopefully your own dogs don't bite you.
No, that hasn't happened, touch wood. The other little story I had to tell this week was... You probably know this. It's the week of everyone doing their income taxes, or in fact, the week is over. The day was Monday of this week, where everyone has to get their income taxes in. And I think probably like a lot of people in the United States, I end up in a flurry of paperwork when I get my taxes done. And so Carson and I decided to purge our house of paperwork. And we got rid of a lot of paperwork. I mean, like, we have a big recycling bin, and it was full. And that didn't include the stuff we had to shred. You know, that was another batch. So we got rid of a ton of stuff. But it was a kind of an interesting archaeological dig. One of the things we found were Carson's wedding vows to me.
Oh, all these years later, you finally found them?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, we've kept them in our hearts, but to actually find physical evidence.
Well, sure. Yes. So did you get rid of those is the question.
We didn't actively throw them away. But they were very sweet. One of the things it said, she said, "I love that you bring me a cup of tea in the morning." That was one of the things she said in her wedding vows. This is only worth noting because the next day, I always get up earlier than everybody else, and I try and feed the dogs and keep the dogs quiet so no one gets bothered by the dogs. I make a pot of tea, and when I hear Carson, I take her a cup of tea, you see. So I made the pot of tea, but I never heard Carson, and I was hanging out with the dogs. And finally, Carson came and got her own cup of tea. And as she made her own cup of tea, she yelled, "What about your vows?"
Oh. She was just reminding you.
I remembered, I thought later, those were her vows, not mine. I didn't vow to make her tea, you know. She was... So I fell down, as usual.
I'm sure she'll forgive you.
Yeah, as long as I get back on the tea-making duties, anyway.
Exactly, yes. So did you bring her tea the next day?
I mean, I make her tea every morning. I mean, every single morning. Okay. It's just I don't like to creep back and see if she's awake, because I might wake her up, you see. So I have to wait for the first sound of her to... And sometimes I miss it. What am I supposed to do?
I'm a very light sleeper myself, so that's probably a good plan.
Yeah.
Can I give a public service announcement to not be rude to your florist?
Oh, yeah. You can definitely do that. I mean, of all the people in the world you shouldn't be rude to, it seems like the florist would be top of that list. I mean, it's not like the florist could poison your coffee or something. But, I mean, they're bringing joy, you know?
Well, it's... We get a lot of last minute people that, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I should have called you earlier in the day," or "I forgot," or, you know, some sad story where there's a reason why they haven't called us yet, and they would like to know if we can help them out last minute. And it all depends on your attitude a good portion of the time, because if you would like to be rude to me, I'm sorry, we don't have any more time today. And, you know, if you're polite and... Maybe we can. Sometimes it's a product issue where we don't have it, or there actually is no time. But a good attitude always helps.
Yeah, yeah. It's a life lesson for everyone for every situation. Honestly, I'm sort of gullible though, and if I went, this is not my style. But if I went in somewhere and I was, you know, aggressive about getting it done, and they told me they couldn't do it because of whatever reason, I would take that at face value. It wouldn't occur to me that they were actually getting revenge on me for being a horrible person. But fortunately, my default position is to be try to be endearing to everyone, so I would never do
yes
that.
Your charming self would probably have no problem.
Well, that's kind of you to say. All right. Well, it's great to talk to you, but it's time to get down to business. How did we leave Brienne of Tarth? Last we saw of Brienne, she was beginning her search for Sansa Stark. She's not naming her quarry. Instead, she's looking for her sister, niece, of auburn hair, a girl of 3 and 10. She was headed to Duskendale on the thinnest of leads and rebuffing offers of assistance. Some of her fellow road warriors are wise to whom she's really after. The reward is drawing more people to the hunt. Jenny, why don't we give the summary of this one?
All right. Brienne waits to enter Duskendale. The gates are barred until dawn, but there are already a line of farm carts hoping to sell their wares, a couple of wealthy townsmen, and a kid on a piebald roundsy. She asks about Sansa, although not by name, and nobody can help. The guards arrive and wave the others through, but question the strapping knight on the house with the house lost and shield. As she explains that it is not her house and she intends to get it repainted, the guards are appeased, partly because they realize she's a woman, and partly because the guard's sister is a painter and he directs Brienne to her shop.
The gate opens to a marketplace where food can be bought and any amount of looted arms and armor. Brienne recognizes many of the sigils, a good portion of them northern. She sees lighter shields for sale, but she's happy with her heavy oaken shield. She stables her horse and walks to the painter's shop, the door of which is beautifully decorated. The proprietress recognizes the Lothston sigil with a shudder. Brienne cannot use Tarth colours, she still wanted for the murder of Renly, so describes a sigil she knew from her father's armoury. It will take a day, so she takes a room in the inn across the street.
The Seven Swords is so named for the seven sons of House Darklyn, who served on the King's Guard. A maid fills the bath for Brienne and tells her there are no more Darklyns, but plenty of derivatives. Darks, Darkwoods, Dargoods. As she bathes, Brian recalls the bathhouse and Jamie. She tries to scrub away the memory with thoughts of Renly. Afterwards, she walks to the Dunfort, the castle of Duskendale, and the seat of House Riker. The Lord is at Maidenpool with Randall Tarly. Rufus Leek is in charge.
Brienne's letter of introduction is not much use to Leek. He cannot read. So he sends her to the Maester. The latter is annoyed. Seems everyone passing through town is looking for Sir Dontus Hollard. He gives Brienne a history of House Hollard and House Darklyn leading up to the defiance of Duskendale. Brienne only knows a little of the tale, which her own Maester had told her was the event that pushed Mad King Aerys over the edge of madness. In the end, the Maester sees no reason why Dontus Hollard would have returned to Duskendale and urges Brienne to look for him elsewhere.
Brienne's mood is dark. As she walks back to the inn, she's feeling hopeless. During further contemplation, she thinks Sansa would not have fled to strangers. She remembers the interrogation of Sansa's maid Brella, who mentions Sansa's piety, and of her many trips to the Godswood. Brella suggested Sansa would probably have returned to the north.
The north is vast, and Brienne can't begin to guess which bannerman Sansa might have trusted, so she thinks of Sansa's relatives instead. This could mean Jon at the Wall, her uncle Brynden at Riverrun, or her aunt Lysa in the Vale. While she's pondering, she takes a wrong turn, gets lost, and finds a dead end. As she heads back the way she came, she collides with a familiar-looking boy. As he mutters an apology and runs off, she realizes it's the boy from the line at the front gate.
Brienne returns to a crowded inn, but a dwarf holy brother gives her his seat. He tells her the sad fate of his serving house and how he had managed to avoid being killed by sellswords by squeezing into a log to hide. When Brienne mentions the brother she saw headed to King's Landing, the dwarf says hundreds of brothers, septons, and small folk are headed that way. He names them sparrows.
Brienne asks the holy brother if he has seen Sansa or Sir Dontus. He reveals that he spied a fool in Maidenpool at an establishment called the Stinking Goose. The fool was looking for passage for three across the narrow sea. Brienne wonders if the third could be Tyrion. The dwarf mentions that a few days later a man named Nimble Dick was in the same establishment boasting that he had fooled a fool. Brienne buys his dinner and thinks on all he has told her. She's leery of Maidenpool with Lord Tarly in attendance, but decides it's her best course of action.
That night she dreams of Renly's death, but his face turns into Jaime's face. The next morning, the painter returns her repainted shield and Brienne heads out of town. She sees the common grave of all the fallen Northmen and says a silent prayer for them and for Robb and Catelyn as well. Outside of town, a storm is brewing, so Brienne takes shelter in the ruins of what must be House Hollard's former castle.
She hears the approach of a rider and can see it as a small man. She feels it is Sir Shadrich the Mad Mouse. She hopes it will come to a fight, but then realizes it isn't Sir Shadrich. It's a boy. The same boy, in fact, from Duskendale and as far back as Rosby. She knows he must be following her, so she decides to ambush him in the rain. She sneaks up from behind to whack his horse on the rump. When the horse rears, the boy falls in the mud.
When pressed, the boy stammers out that his name is Podrick Payne. She feels sympathy for the boy, remembering being nervous at Evenfall when welcoming Sir Ronan Connington. Brienne demands answers, and Podrick explains that Brella had told him Brienne is looking for Sansa. He surmises that finding Sansa will lead him to Tyrion. Pod states he was Tyrion's squire, and he is dejected that Tyrion left him behind.
Yeah, so a big chunk of this chapter is about the history of the region and House Darklyn, House Hollard, and the defiance of Duskendale. We skipped over it a little bit in the description, and we're going to cover it more in background. But that was these larger chapters that we get in A Feast for Crows give sort of room for that kind of deeper dive into the history, which is interesting, but it does mean that they're a little slower, I think, as chapters.
Yeah, I think so. And also, I feel like that summary was really long, and my background is really long, so.
Everything is roughly. I think that was a slightly longer summary than we normally do, but that's good. I mean, that takes the pressure off us for doing the chit chat. You know, we don't have to be sure. As you know, McKelly. My God, he can fill time. That guy. If we have a 4-page summary, that's an hour and a half for sure. Then we have to fix it in post. This is going to be we're going to have a tight 50 here, and I'm going to be very happy with that.
Okay. All right.
So we do get an interesting bit of insight into Brienne's character. When she's standing in line, she talks about how the fact there's a tendency when you're reading this to see the POV characters as sort of gods, and the people that they interact with are sort of like, you know, NPCs, you know, that barely say anything, that barely have an existence, because you know the point of view characters so well. They just seem like completely different creatures than the people they talk to. But Brienne is inherently shy, and that's exacerbated by, as she puts it, long years of scorn. She is only 20, so her idea of long years and mine may be slightly different. But it's hard for her to ask people about Sansa, not just because she knows it's unlikely to be successful, but because she doesn't want to talk to strangers. She's an introvert, and I hadn't really thought of it that way.
Okay, so I agree what you're saying. Chronologically, she's only 20, and that's not very old. But if you think about it this way, this is how I see it for Brienne. Her childhood was not great. No. Her father loved her, but he didn't understand her. Her septa was unusually critical and harsh, or maybe not unusually, but I mean, I feel like she was overly critical and harsh. She didn't have any friends. The septon was her mother figure, so, you know, that's really her only companion. All of her suitors that she had treated her horribly.
Yeah.
So to me, that just makes for a really long childhood, even if it was.
That is true.
Yes.
That is undeniable. And plus, it doesn't give you any buffer from it because she is so young still. Yes. Her childhood was so recent. I mean, I've forgotten all of the horrible things that happened to me in my childhood. There were very few, but, you know, they're lost in time now. But for her, they're yesterday's news, you know.
I think that to Brienne, that probably just seems interminable. Like, there's...
Yeah. I will say, though, I think she should remind herself that she's she's huge, and she's armored, and she's carrying a big sword. Those people she's talking to are probably going to be a lot more afraid of that conversation than she is.
Agreed. But again, with the self-esteem, this is probably going to come out rude, and I don't mean it that way, but she's an unattractive woman. And even in today's world, people respond more positively to people who are attractive. And she doesn't conform to gender norms, which back in, you know, medieval times was not something that was received very positively either.
Yeah.
So she probably just doesn't know how to carry herself or have any positive self-esteem.
I hadn't even thought of that. That, of course, before she talks to people, they probably assume something about her, which as soon as she speaks to them, they probably all react like, wait a minute, that's a woman.
Yes. Well, just think of the girls she talked to who were laughing at her. I mean, on the surface, it sounds like, oh, so what? Some girls laughed at her. But that's, I mean, you know, that's the reception that she gets everywhere she goes. Or scorn.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm feeling terrible for her now.
I just had to stick up for her because that's the way I view it.
So. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's... I mean, that really is so rotten. You know, I mean, so, and plus... Given the path she's on, she has absolutely no alternative but to keep talking to strangers and keep having strangers react. Even well-intentioned strangers are going to do a double take when she speaks, and it turns out she was a woman after all.
Yes.
Which is only going to serve to remind her that she's a freak, you know? And
that's how people view her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Do you enjoy these background chapters or the history chapters where it's kind of showing the ravages of war with the small folk? Do you find that interesting?
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Heron Hall affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
I do. I mean, my relationships with these books has been very influenced by doing the podcast.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If I was reading this on a beach for pleasure, yeah, I would love this chapter. I love the sort of like, you know, the deeper you go on the history and the implications of the main body of the story on the, you know, the rest of the realm. Fascinating to me. From a podcast point of view, I find them a little bit more, you know, it feels like stretching the inevitable a little bit.
I can understand that. I think it's kind of like Arya's chapters in A Storm of Swords, where all the wandering around, but you're actually getting, like, what's happening in the Riverlands,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've got to be careful of that, because I think it comes across a little bit that I'm kind of like impatient for things to move along, and really I'm not. I mean, I really like Arya chapters, and I really like these Brienne chapters, but it's much easier to write a podcast about a Tyrion chapter with a bit of Cersei thrown in and a bit of Varys thrown in. They just have more
Definitely.
Meat on them, you know.
The action has more meat on it for sure.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up that dwarf holy brother says that the wolves burned their holy house. The first time I read that, I was kind of surprised, because I didn't think that the North was doing things like that. That seems like something that, like, Tywin's army would do or Randall Tarly's army would do.
But bail me out here. Remember that of the two of us, you're the one with the memory. So people who came to Duskendale or to this region were Roose Bolton's men, right? Didn't he send them here? Isn't this where Roose Bolton lost a third of the foot soldiers of the North?
That is true. That's a good point. Because this is where he sent them on purpose to get rid of them so they didn't have so many to kill at the Twins.
Right. And so maybe he gave them explicit instructions to be as obnoxious as possible to exacerbate the number of enemies they would find.
That's good. That's a good point. Yeah.
The only reason I remember that is because of McKellie saying the joke about Dunkin' Donuts.
Really?
Yeah, because do you remember that joke? He said he lost a third of his foot and then he stumbled on Duskendale and called it Dunkendale, and then we riffed on that a little bit and
yes.
We called it Dunkin' Donuts, and he said, yeah, you could lose a third of your foot to Dunkin' Donuts because of diabetes. And I was like, oh,
I remember that now.
Joke.
That was a good joke, yes.
But that's why I remember that Roose Bolton was the man who sent all of these foot soldiers here. But yeah, actually, that does track now you've said it. And plus, it also tracks why you were surprised in the first place, because I would agree. I mean, I would have thought that under Robb Stark's, you know, oversight, they would be told not to do those things.
Yes.
Good call.
I had a question for you. Do you feel like Tyrion pretty much ignored Podrick Payne in the books? Like, didn't really have time for him or acknowledge him?
I saw that you were going to ask me something about this in the notes, and I was kind of prepping, and the first thought I had was the TV show really developed that relationship.
It did, and I think the show did it better. That's one of the plot lines where I think the show did it a lot better than the book did.
Yeah. And so my recollection and opinion of Tyrion and Pod's relationship is definitely influenced by watching and rewatching the show.
Right.
I do agree, though. I think their relationship, but in particular Pod's character, were just much better developed in the show. Now, maybe Pod's character is going to develop from this point, you know, but basically he's very, very shy, barely talked at all, and just out of the blue he came up and saved his life. You know, that seemed to be that's what we got from him in the book. But in the TV show,
Tyrion was kind to him, for sure. He wasn't unkind to him. He probably one of the more kind people that Pod had met, but it still doesn't seem like the book, relationship was as fleshed out.
So do you feel like... So what Pod says at the end of this chapter is presumably heartfelt. I just have a back of my mind that Pod... That, I don't really believe this, but Brienne might wonder, has Tyrion sent Pod to keep tabs on her?
I don't know. They just met, so we can't really comment past that.
Right.
That would be more in the spoiler section. I was wondering if it was like, I don't think this is it, but a small part of me wondered if it was more like a Lannister always pays their debts. Well, Pod saved Tyrion's life, and he didn't really get anything out of that. Mm-hmm. People have done less for Tyrion and gotten rewarded. And
yeah.
Podrick's maybe
saying this just a couple of weeks ago. I was saying that Lannister's paying their debts really is more about revenge than about things they owe people.
Exactly.
They're not so good on that, really.
No.
But yeah, I think... So anyway, I think there's a chance that Brienne might be a little skeptical about Pod's motivations here, because certainly it's possible that... Two possibilities should occur to Brienne. Tyrion sent Pod to find Sansa, because Tyrion wants to find Sansa too. And he might report back to Tyrion where Sansa is. Secondly, he might want to protect Sansa, and therefore Pod might be there to confuse and misdirect Brienne. Because Tyrion, there's a reasonable... sort of set of thoughts that says Tyrion knows precisely where Sansa is. Pod works for Tyrion, and now Pod is going to protect Sansa by not letting Brienne find the right path. I don't think any of this is true, but I think Brienne should have these suspicions.
I think so too, but the problem with Brienne is, I think, especially with a child, that she's probably not going to think of those things.
Right. And actually, given what we do know of Pod from the book, I think even if he was sent to do those things, which I'm sure he wasn't, I really am sure he wasn't, I'm sure he's trying to get back to Tyrion, just as he said. But I think he's going to fall for Brienne in the same way that he fell for Tyrion. He's going to act as a page to her and end up being incredibly loyal to her. And if he had this burning secret inside her, eventually he'd spill it to her. He'd be like, you know what? I'm actually spying on you. She's over there. Let's go.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Just to mention one word that you said in the recap, which is arouncy. This is a word I was not terribly familiar with. It doesn't seem to have cropped up in the books very often, but Pod, was riding a piebald rouncy, and a rouncy was a medieval term for a general purpose horse, not like a war horse or a cart horse, but just something you could ride or use to pull a plow, or, you know, just a general purpose horse was a rouncy, so...
I'm glad you looked that up, because I was going to. I wasn't sure either. I know what piebald means, but didn't know that.
So House Darkling, like we said, we'll get to this particularly in the background, but the one thing that, the one sort of big fact of it was that it has contributed 7 Kingsguard members over the years, and that is the most of any house. And that's a huge source of pride to Duskendale. Even though House Darkling has actually died out, it's still... I mean, the main inn in Duskendale is called the Seven Swords?
Seven Swords.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that is a lot of members from the same family.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually wondered about that being slightly due to proximity. If you think about it, the Starks probably don't contribute that many just because they're so far away, you know? Even if you had someone, you know, a third Stark son who was superb with a sword, that news of that might never reach King's Landing and they'd never get picked.
Well, I think probably more than that is they'd probably rather send that person to fight on the wall than be on the Kingsguard.
Quite true. Very good. Oh, so one thing that I noticed, this is not pedantry, but I did notice. I was surprised by how well-versed the people were on heraldry. The guard on the gate of Duskendale immediately spotted her shield as being House Lothston, which the very name House Lothston gives me a lisp, as I say. I keep saying House. So House Lothston. And but that maybe that makes sense, because the guard perhaps is told to know his heraldry so that if someone comes to the gate, he knows who they are. But his own sister also knew the heraldry of House Lothston, too.
Well, I saw that you had said that, and I think it could be maybe like old Nan telling scary tales to the children, where House Lothston is kind of known for, you know, their bad deeds. So maybe they were told to children to scare them into behaving, or, you know, for entertainment purposes.
So sort of like the Snarks and Grumpkins of Duskendale.
Yes.
I see. Interesting.
Like with the lady telling the story about giant bats coming to carry children off.
That is pretty scary. The one thing I'll say, I think I totally get it. That is a very plausible reason for them to know this. But old Nan of Duskendale is a good storyteller. She included the sigils, you know, not just, you know, she's like, this is what the sigil of this house looks like, and it's coming to terrorize you at night if you don't say your prayers and go to bed.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
That's a good point. I don't know. I do think that maybe just because it's general knowledge in that area.
Yeah. Apparently so. So, Duskendale as a town is overlooked by the Dunfort, and the Dunfort is the seat of House Riker. It was formerly the seat of House Darklyn. I don't have much more to say about it, really.
No, it sounds pretty unimpressive as far as castles go.
It doesn't have the greatest name. We're not called the Ghosts of Dunfort, that's for sure.
Exactly.
The other interesting thing for me was the experience that Brienne has in the Dunfort. So the Lord Riker's not there. So she meets Rufus Leake, who's been left in charge in Lord Riker's absence. He can't read her letter of introduction, which is signed by the king. So she ends up talking to the Maester. But he says that she might be the 21st person. He probably is exaggerating, but that has come looking for information about House Hollard. So she's hunting down the best thread she could find, which wasn't very strong, and she's 21st in line. It's not very good odds. She's going to have to, I feel, find some out-of-the-box thinking to try and get ahead of this whole crowd, because presumably this whole crowd is going to follow the same stepping stones that she's now following, you know?
Yes, I agree. And I think, first of all, can I say, do you think you should be leaving people in charge who can't read?
Well, I mean, that's what the Maesters are for, you know? I mean, my fan fiction dream was all about the fact that many of the High Lords can't even read. They rely on their Maesters for that. But yeah,
that's true.
I would think that if I were a High Lord, I would make sure that my kids could read so that a Maester couldn't misinform them. So the newly painted shield, it's painted a specific sigil, which she knew from her time in Tarth. It was in her father's armory. Obviously, she's avoiding Tarth colours because of who she is and the fact that she still thinks people are after her for the murder of Renly. But it's a spoiler, right?
It is a spoiler.
Okay.
I mean, we could probably say what it was painted as, but we can't.
Oh, yes, I'd like to hear that. Will you remind me how it was painted? Because I've forgotten that much.
It's a falling star and a sunset background with a tree.
Okay. Pretty. Sounds a little bit like South Carolina.
It does.
All right, so let's talk more about that in spoilers. Thanks. I have said before, actually, and again, this is another thing where I might be influenced by the TV show as much as by the book, but the odd couple pairings are often the strength of the books and the TV show. I think of Tyrion and Bronn, Arya and Sandor Clegane, Brienne and Jaime as well. And now I think Brienne and Pod have the potential to be another one. Although, given that they're both very shy, it might be a trickier pairing to be entertaining and diverting.
Probably so, because Brienne's character doesn't lead to a lot of joking or witty banter. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. And
can I tell you a pairing I don't like?
Please,
Sansa and Littlefinger.
No, well, it's very hard to like those two. I suppose if you really didn't like Sansa, you might be happy that those two were together. But otherwise, yes, there's not a lot to be said for that one. So the story of Nimble Dick trying to provide a passage for three people to go across the Narrow Sea, one of whom was a fool, is interesting. But I had no idea. It felt like I should know. But I had no idea who those three people might be. Do you?
Unfortunately, that's also in the spoiler section.
Oh my god. Listen, you're going to have to join at the higher levels to get all this information. Well, that's good to know. I'm looking forward to the spoiler section, Jenny. Should be good.
It should be good.
But maybe they never got there, because the back end of that story was that Nimble Dick, the guy who arranged the passage for them, had fooled the fool. So maybe they never got there.
It sounds like he took their money pretty much for the passage that they were trying mm-hmm. to buy. So they yeah. probably did not get anywhere.
So the last question I had was about she's afraid to go to Maidenpool because that's where Randall Tarly is. And she never explained why she was afraid, but I presumed it's the same reason she didn't get the Tarth colours painted on her shield. She is trying to keep a low profile because people who were fans of Renly Baratheon still hold her responsible for his death.
I think that's true, yes, but also because I believe that Randall Tarly is just familiar with who she is, aside from the killing of Renly. He knows, you know, how she doesn't conform to gender norms. He doesn't like that in particular.
Ah.
He thinks that she should be at home wearing a dress, so...
Ah. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, that fits. Because what I was going to ask was, shouldn't Randall Tarly now forgive the people who killed Renly because he's switched sides, basically? As a Lannister, you'd be like, no, she's fine. She killed our enemies.
I think, yeah, he should, and that's why I would think it would be more about the other problem.
Excellent. Thank you. You have an excellent perspective, Jenny.
Well, thank you.
We need to have all three of us on an episode.
Well, we did that once.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
I literally don't remember that. We really did.
We really did. It was, I believe it was the 200th episode. That's what the fun new edition was, when it was all three of us.
But it was a regular chapter.
Yes.
That's disturbing. That is disturbing to me. I'm editing all this out because there's a level of humor about my memory, and then there's just a level of fear, and we've crossed the line here.
I could tell.
That seems such a great idea. I'm glad we did it. I'll have to go back and listen to that one.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no. Yeah, because you definitely bring us new perspective and new ideas. All right, anyway, I think it's time for spoilers, which, given how many times we've tipped our hand towards these spoilers, I am looking forward to these. All right, you've got some background for us. Tell us about House Darklyn.
Okay. All right, here we go. House Darklyn was formerly a seat of kings, and it was a port of importance. But then King's Landing popped up, and all the wealth and trade dwindled due to that growth. So enter Lord Dennis Darklyn, the last of his house, who wanted to halt the decline of Duskendale with a charter for the city. Unfortunately, Tyrion Lannister was against that idea, and he was the hand of King Aerys at the time, so King Aerys refused that charter. Lord Darklyn was infuriated, and he hatched a new plan that ended up having dire consequences. He had taken a Mirish wife who was known as the Lace Serpent, and many blamed her for whispering this ill-fated plan in his ear. Lord Darklyn refused to pay his taxes in 277 AC, that was while King Aerys was still king, and he invited King Aerys to come hear his petition about why he wasn't paying his taxes. Lord Tywin advised King Aerys not to go, but King Aerys was trying to distance himself from Lord Tywin because they were usually at odds, and King Aerys went to Duskendale anyway. He brought only one member of the Kingsguard in his retinue, which seems unwise, and that was Sir Gawain Gaunt. When he arrived, King Aerys was taken prisoner, and Sir Gawain Gaunt was slain by Lord Dennis's master-at-arms, Sir Simon Hollard. So enter the Hollards, and that's how they get entangled in this mess. Lord Tywin brought an army and camped outside Duskendale, but Lord Dennis made it clear that he would kill the king at the first sign of attack. The defiance lasted half a year until Lord Tywin finally got tired of it and issued a final surrender warning, declaring he would slaughter everyone inside the gates. Unless it was ended. Sir Barristan Selmy offered to do a solo rescue mission. Lord Tywin gave him one day to complete it. So Sir Barristan scaled the walls and made his way into the Dunfort, disguised as a beggar. He avenged his sworn brother by killing Sir Simon Hollard, and he freed King Aerys. He took an arrow wound to the chest. So after they discovered that King Aerys was freed, Lord Dennis opened his gates and asked for mercy, but none was given. And both houses were wiped out to a man and a woman. So Lord Dennis and all of his relatives were killed, and then House Hollard also. So both houses were wiped out in that single instance.
With the one exception of Ser Dontos, right?
Yes, that's correct. Ser Dontos was a boy at the time, and his father actually had had nothing to do with any of the trouble at Duskendale. So Sir Barristan Selmy is the one that asked that Ser Dontos be spared.
Right. So it's a horrible backstory for Ser Dontos, and perhaps explains why he is like he is. I mean, he can't... His life is...
I agree. He has no relatives. His house was wiped off the map. He doesn't really have a lot of things to be happy about.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Comparison with the television show, this is exactly the kind of ruminative, deep dive, historical chapter that is very easily skipped by the TV show. Brienne, I almost talked about this last time, the Brienne chapter. Brienne actually leaves King's Landing in Pod's company. They don't find each other on the road. They leave together. Jaime brings Pod to her to act as her squire for Pod's safety, because Tyrion fears that Pod will be killed for his relationship with Tyrion, because Tyrion's on the outs. And so Jaime arranges for Pod to go with Brienne so that he's out of King's Landing and out to safety. Because the Pod character was much older too, you know, he was like 17 or something instead of 11. He's a much more interesting character, and they put a lot of comedy. He was a lot of comic relief around Pod, so he stumbles over calling her sir and milady and things, and it's all humor ensues. But that's it. I don't think there's anything else in the TV show.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Pedantry Corner, I didn't find anything here really, and because I'm recording with you, I didn't look too hard.
Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome. News and notes. You see, I do remember some things. There's some things I do remember. I remember you saying that. I totally don't remember recording with all three of us. But, you know. News and notes. So I'm going to let you read the review. I'll do the first part here. According to the actor Kit Harington, the Game of Thrones spin-off show focused on Harrington's character Jon Snow has been shelved due to the lack of a compelling storyline. However, he did leave the door open for it to be picked up at a later date. Now, I will say to this news that I could have told you this. Jon Snow goes through so much in these books and the TV show that there's nothing left. Just enumerating the things that he does. He kills Quarren Halfhand, he joins the Wildlings, he sleeps with Ygritte, he defended the Wall from the greatest host of Wildling ever, he becomes the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch in his teens, and then all the other things that haven't happened yet, which are incredible.
I completely agree. I would have given this show a chance just to see what they had come up with, but I was not really looking forward to it. I didn't have any good expectations from it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like his life was a bad soap opera to begin with. I mean, they would have had to bring in an evil twin, probably, to make it, you know.
Maybe that's what they were
going
to do.
Now I've said that. That is pretty good. Maybe we should. let's pitch this idea to HBO. All right. We got a review from GeorgieBB8 from Apple Podcasts Australia. Why don't you take it away, Jenny?
All right. GeorgieBB8 says, love this podcast. This is my favorite podcast. I love the quick summary followed up by a more in-depth analysis of each chapter. I particularly enjoy getting a bit of extra background and insight into the detailed world created by GRRM, George R.R. Martin. Having already read through the series, I wasn't expecting to be shocked by anything, but listening to the different perspectives provided by Simon and McKelly, and occasionally Jenny, hey, I got a mention.
Ha-ha!
Thanks. I definitely had a few light bulb moments. Damp hair. Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Along the way, it's sad that after a couple of months of binging, I'm all caught up and now waiting week to week with the rest. Thanks for all the hard yards you guys do putting this together.
Well, thank you, GeorgieBB8. That's very kind of you. And very kind of you to notice Jenny in your review as well.
Yes, it was. Thank you.
When I told you to read that, I'd forgotten that you got to mention it.
I didn't even pay attention to that, so.
All right, let's draw a line under this one. It doesn't seem to me that Sodontus and Sansa come this way, unless this cockamamie story about Nimble Dick and the three people looking for a passage across the... Well, I mean, wait a minute. I'm pretending I don't know, but I do know that Sodontus didn't come this way because he's extremely dead, and I know where Sansa is too. So,
yes, from we've Brienne's already read perspective, that part. So,
it doesn't seem yes. So, it doesn't seem likely they came this way, but there is this new lead in Maidenpool, so it might be worth.
It seems like a really thin lead, though. Would you follow that lead yourself? Possibly,
no.
Since that's she's no. not going on much anyway.
Again, I would go with her thoughts about her relatives. That's what I would do.
I think that's a stronger lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the way I would have gone. But
maybe go to Maidenpool and go to the Flying Goose or whatever it was called and ask around and then take a ship to the Vale from there.
Yes, I agree.
Interestingly, Brienne's dreams are switching from Renly to Jaime.
Yes. I think we're seeing a little bit of, her conscious thoughts slipping to Jaime. So he's, and it's funny that she thought Renly was kind to her, and that's why she fell in love with him. And then her and Jaime's relationship started out horribly.
Yeah. That's a good thought. I wonder if that rocky start can sort of like lead to a deeper relationship, though, because a lot of Renly was quite surface. I'm not saying he wasn't a nice person, but he would, like me going into a florist at 5:02, he would be nice because, he'd want to get his own way.
Yes. Well, the thing between Jaime and Renly is at least Jaime was upfront about the way he felt at first. Renly seemed like he was nice to her, but we do get a line in a previous chapter that Jaime had talking to Loras, where Loras said that he and Renly used to make fun of her.
Excellent.
So I don't think that he was actually being kind to be kind. Renly. So
yes,
Jaime
yes.
actually came to be kind on his own through his own decisions,
Yeah. And that's the thing, because he was brutally honest with her from the get-go, she feels she can believe him now, Whereas Renly, he was nice on the surface, and then you might start to hear things later on, and you're never going to believe him anymore. You'll never believe a word he says.
Yeah, well, I don't think Brienne knew that he was making fun of her behind her back.
Right,
It just, how we, perceive these two and her relationship with them kind of changes with that, I think.
Beautiful. So Brienne's letter is opening doors for her. I thought it was surprisingly easy, actually, for her to get into the Dunfort with that letter. I would have thought there would be more obstacles to,
a little more red tape.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But since the Maester had apparently talked to 20 other people, the keys to that door were widely accessible. You didn't need a letter signed by the king. You could just walk in and ask.
Well, I think it probably helps that she's dressed in, I would say, maybe decent mail. She looks like she might be someone reputable. I don't think that, you know, the nearest beggar could walk up and be like, I need to speak to the master of the house, you know.
Good point. Good point. So Brienne now has a traveling companion. That will help. I think a little conversation along the road will be make her chapters pop a little bit more. And potentially a new interesting odd couple in Brienne and Pod.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, maybe Pod can learn some things from her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, next up. Unlike Brienne, we do know where Sansa is. And Brienne just has to read the next chapter of the book to find out. We'll catch up with the other flame-haired mistress of fairy tales next time. That was a reference to you, Jenny. Did you notice?
Oh, thanks.
All right, there's four ways that you could help us. You could leave us a positive review like Georgie BB8 did, and we thank you again. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal. You can join us at any of the various sustainer levels. There's a tier to match your budget and interest, and the higher tiers get you the spoiler section, which, when Jenny's at the helm, is really good. Oh, you can make a donation directly to our website at ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
Looking for more ways to interact with these guys? Keep up on the latest GOH news and developments? Check them out on our social media. Follow them on Twitter at Ghost Harrenhal, Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.